You're listening to Peach, Pear, Plum, a parenting podcast.
Hi, Nicole.
Hi, Jen.
Oh, it's nice to be recording with you again.
Number five.
We can count them on our hands.
Yes.
Hooray. Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about a noun, the forest.
The forest.
But maybe we'll turn it into a verb by the time the podcast is over.
There's no P.
What will we do? Oh, we'll survive. So, you know, the inspiration for, you know, we search each time for a topic. What should we talk about for the podcast? And the inspiration for this podcast in discussing the forest came from an Instagram post I saw someone share. And it was really simple. It was one of those memes. And it just said, everything is normal in the forest. And it kind of caught me. Maybe it actually was everything is the same in the forest. But either way, it caught me in the moment because it was a reminder that even though our world feels so chaotic and kind of out of control or lots of things to feel anxious about, that when we're out in nature, when we're in the forest, if we can find a way to slow down our mind and be a little quiet, everything's still the same. The earth is so far today spinning on its axis still, water's flowing, birds are chirping, things are growing. And it just made me feel really peaceful to read that. And I thought, oh yes, everything is still the same in the forest. So then I started to get curious about how can the forest nurture us or sustain us? So if we're talking about raising kids, how can we share the forest with our kids?
It's interesting that we can already open our minds to this conversation about what the forest will bring to us just by thinking about the forest.
Yes, I'm with you. It's kind of calming even just thinking about it.
And this quote that you read was enough to transport you into this place from inside.
It really was. And there's so many ways that we could approach the topic of the forest. We could talk about forests that are threatened, like by logging or, you know, protecting water, that kind of thing. We could talk about the forest in terms of sports or activities, things that someone might actively do in the forest. But then I settled into a really peaceful, I decided to hang out in that peaceful feeling of what can the forest do in terms of nourishing us, nurturing us and our families. So then I took a bit of a dive into the idea of forest bathing. Such a strange term.
You and I have been tossing this term around, and it is, but it's a thing.
It is a thing, like Ian, and a kind of ancient thing.
Right, and so both you and I have been thinking about forest bathing, reading about it.
Right.
And so it balances both a recognition and an attention drawing to the sustaining of the forest and protecting the forest through getting into the forest and enjoying and finding healing in the forest. So it balances two things that are very real to families in this area.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And in some ways, the idea of forest bathing could be in a simple way, just spending time in the forest. I keep thinking of like a bathtub in the middle of a fern grotto with
which
nakedness.
Would be lovely.
But it doesn't have to be that.
You don't have to be naked. You can be though probably wait for spring and summer, because I think probably being naked to forest bathe would be a lovely way to do it.
It would be a little cold right now.
It would be cold right now.
But so it was really interesting to realize that, as we joked, it's actually a thing. Mm-hmm. As simple as spending time in the forest, but also it can be more layered than that or more nuanced. So in this episode, we're going to do a bit of a deep dive into forest bathing. I have reached out to the Global Institute of Forest Therapies. It sounds so important, and indeed it is, but ultimately it's a non-profit run by a really interesting guy named Ben Porchuk. It's a Canadian non-profit, although, as the lofty title suggests, it's a global initiative. So it's going to be really interesting to my mind to connect with Ben and find out a little bit about forest bathing around the world.
So we'll hear that interview, and then we had this fun idea that I will dive in and forest bathe. So
I challenge you. You don't have to be naked.
Over the next week, I'm going to kind of take on these sort of ideas and go out and yeah, follow a step by step. I've done a little bit of research, so I'm kind of excited. Mm. And so really forest bathing or forest therapy is about exploring all of your senses very slowly in the forest.
Really,
so not racing
present,
through.
That's
not right.
Racing through. Yeah.
So it's about not only noticing the trees around you, but also where they grow from. I want to ask you a question. So this idea of being in the forest and finding a wonderful peace there, how will this be different from, let's say, standing on the top of a mountain, or how about on a beach looking out at the ocean? What's going to be the difference about finding your peace in nature, I would say, deep within a treed area?
Well, beautiful question. And ultimately, it won't be so different in that being outside and absorbing the beauty of our surroundings and the environment may offer us peace at any, you know, at any location. But I think what makes forest bathing a little bit, I understand, what makes it different is the greenness and that paying attention to the layers in a forest, to the different patterns that there are, to the variety of sounds, to the smells. Those are the things that come to mind, but we'll learn more together.
We will. And then, I mean, I'm reminded of my partner in life is a very active, busy person. And as a child, he was nonstop movement. And his parents spent a lot of time outside. And they tell me stories about how they would teach him about mushrooms and flowers and birds and plants to slow him down so that they had a chance to keep up. And I don't think it was so much a bathing process they were looking for, but just to be able to keep track of him in nature.
Yeah.
So for children and families, this is kind of what I'm thinking. It's going to be about having a child. They'll have the excitement of being up and over and around the kind of obstacles that you find, the physical obstacles in the forest, but also being able to stop long enough to notice some things. So
yeah, that being quiet in the forest with the idea of bringing our families along can be kind of opposing forces. So what I found in the last few weeks when I was playing with this idea and hauling my 9-year-old out into the woods was to give him a challenge at the beginning of each walk or little hike, you know, to find something special to show me or to tell me about a sound he heard or to challenge him by asking what he smelled. So in some ways that setting out a focus helped to control just a little bit the excited tendency to chatter away and jump over things and slip and slide. And it, no matter how it ends up unfolding, time spent in the forest with your family always feels peaceful at the end.
Mm-hmm. My name is Ben Porchuk, and by training, for most of my career, I've been an ecologist, a wildlife researcher, and then 5 years ago, I did training to become Canada's first forest therapy guide. Sure. And it was kind of a hard choice. It was down in California, which is beautiful, but I've got a big family here in Canada, and it was a bit of a challenging time for our family, but we decided it was the right time to do it. And it was an amazing training, and I really learned that after, you know, calling myself an outdoors person for my whole life, I really had no idea how to be outside and to really take advantage of some of the things that you can learn in order to shut down your mind and open up your senses and really take in the healing power of nature in that experience. And so that was just a wonderful, great experience, and I brought it back to Canada, and now we've created an international organization, and it's just been really great so far.
It sounds so enriching, you know, to have spent your career in the forest and now to be going so to another level and helping people through forest therapy.
Yeah. It really has been an enriching experience. And always throughout my life, I've been influenced by Native Indigenous communities and people. And shortly before I did the training, I participated and helped co-lead a traditional medicinal plant inventory. And some of the elders taught me how to have conversations with plants. And that was eye-opening. And ever since that time, just before I trained in forest therapy, I started calling myself a recovering scientist because of the saddled beliefs in science and the restrictions of possibility that I really find with that.
Wow, beautiful. As a trained herbalist myself, I'm so tempted to go way off on that tangent with you, but I will restrain myself and hang out in loving what you said. And I'm just going to start throwing the questions at you. Can you explain to our audience what is forest therapy or this forest bathing term that, you know, that we read about when we were researching all the ways that the forest can be beneficial to our families?
Sure. Forest therapy or forest bathing, it comes from, in modern forms, it comes from the Japanese term Shinjin-yoku, which when you read it, it looks like Shinrin-yoku, and it literally means to bathe in the air of the forest. And in modern times, in the early 1980s, people in Japan, especially near the city of Tokyo, were recognizing that a lot of people were getting sick from stress-related diseases. And one of the first studies that they did found that people who spent more time in forests spent less time in hospitals needing to address their stress-related diseases. So they started to look at it and start to break down the different elements of the forest that were really beneficial to a person and what put them in that parasympathetic state where it's the rest and relaxation mode versus the fight and flight mode. So we have kind of two different gears in our bodies, and it's just that rest and relax and fight and flight. And so the calming rest and relax state of our bodies is really aided by being out in the forest and not just breathing in the air, but taking in the beautiful fractal patterns that we see with our eyes, mm-hmm. listening to soothing sounds that we've co-evolved with, whether they are birds calling or wind through the trees or the sound of the patterns of water moving over rocks. Those things have been with us for most of our evolution over tens of thousands of years and more. And in recent times, having been divorced from those things by staying inside, most people in North America spend 91% of their time indoors on average. Being divorced from those, it puts us into that other state of anxiety and fight or flight and thought so much more than actually being in our senses.
Yeah. Wow, that sure resonates with me. I could start to imagine all the health benefits that there might be from hanging out more in a rest and relax kind of state. But what, as a therapist, what do you consider some of the health benefits of forest therapy?
There are, you know, generally about six or seven or eight that people usually talk about, and it's a slower heart rate. It's increased heart rate variability, which means your heart is able to respond much more quickly to things that it needs to act on quickly, or it can relax a lot faster, and that's a lot better in the long term for your heart health. It's also great for things like ADHD or ADD. It's a mood stabilizer. It helps people recover a lot more quickly from surgery. You can go on and on of different things of how it really helps your body even reduce the size and sometimes completely eliminate tumors, some forms of cancer, right? So it is this powerful natural antidote that's there and free. And I meet a lot of people that say, oh, you know, they kind of chuckle, as I did in the beginning. Actually, I yelled down when I found this on my computer and I said to my wife, hey, they created something like called forest therapy. Can you imagine that? I was kind of laughing, right, because it seemed sort of silly. And she is in that field of psychiatry and psychology. And she promptly said, you know, it sounds like something that's up your alley and that you might be able to use. And I kind of laughed myself and then realized, wow, it really did put together a lot of the things. And, of course, it was something that when I go into nature, you know, when I first met my wife, I was showing her all the things I knew in the forest. And, oh, that bird call, that's a chickadee, that's a mating call. And at some point, you know, after she was smiling, she said, would you mind being quiet so I could enjoy this walk?
I'm glad she was able to speak her mind.
Exactly. Yeah. So, it really is a totally different way. And so a lot of people will say, I've been forest bathing for 20 or 30 or 40 years. Mm-hmm. I do this all the time naturally. And our response usually is, good for you. I was one of the people that was, you know, in the forest for exercise or to identify things or to, you know, to really find a way to improve myself versus just being, you know.
Yeah. Hey, is forest therapy as simple as spending the time, being quiet and spending the time, or how does one?
Yeah. Well, quiet's a really important part of it. That's one of the big edges of people in society is that they either like to have a screen on or be listening to music or be talking. Oftentimes when people are quiet, there are thoughts, unresolved issues or worries that come into their mind. So they get themselves busy and often a lot of sound provides that distraction. So that definitely is one of the things. Another thing is being really slow. Usually when we're on a walk, we're on a purpose to get somewhere. We'll often spend 2 to 3 hours on a forest bathing walk. And a lot of times we don't even cover a kilometer, maybe 500 meters. So it's very deliberate. It's very slow. So being out there, being slow and quiet is really important. And the next thing is to really disengage your mind. And I say that in the sense of, you know, obviously you have to think, go on autopilot somewhat. So thinking does really decrease a lot, kind of very akin to meditation. We certainly are still thinking. We're kind of watching the thoughts that are coming in. We're kind of letting the thoughts move away to the point where we can be as clear and as empty as possible. And then often really interesting things, moving things will come in, and then we take notice of what they are. So, and it's often with senses, like with one of the first parts of the forest therapy walk is being really quiet and standing in a circle and just going through and sampling the different senses that we can experience. And often when we get to sound, usually it's been quite quiet. And as soon as the forest therapy guide draws attention to sound, one or two birds will land overhead and just start calling and singing. You know, so it's really quite remarkable how things kind of happen on cue. So I would say there are kind of three things that you know, are very simple, fundamental things for a forest therapy walk: moving slowly, being in silence, and doing your best to keep your mind at bay. Mm-hmm. And corresponding is the opening of the senses. So sight, sound, touch, smell, even taste. We can taste things like moisture in the air or sometimes the food that we had previously or towards the end of the walk, we have a tea ceremony where we've wildcrafted some of the plants that are growing along the trail and we actually get to take in the forest or the prairie or the wetland through our sense of taste, which is usually quite moving for people as well.
Oh, I dig that so much. That's awesome. Can anyone do partake in forest therapy? I mean, it feels like they can, but I'll ask you as the expert.
Yeah, I think so. You know, like I'm probably a good example, and there are probably a lot of people like me because, you know, I just turned 50 this year, but I've been heavily influenced by cell phones and being on all the time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my income is generated by being creative. So when I've been super busy and I get into a forest therapy walk and I finally start to get quiet, usually a lot of ideas will come in spontaneously because of that inspiration. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, while that's a great thing, I still am telling myself, okay, hold off. Like, this is a three hours to really shut down. Mm-hmm. So there are definitely a lot of people that will have a challenge to shutting down and really opening up. But even if it's for a glimpse, just a moment or two, they really get a taste of it, and it becomes something that you can build on. So yeah, I do think it's for just about anyone. There are, you know, some people that are very timid and are brought to walks by their partners. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes it corresponds with somebody who's a little more scientific in thinking. So they'll have a difficulty in what we call dropping in or getting into the zone or finding the moment where you realize your breathing is really assisting the clearing of your mind. And then you notice the synchronicity of things moving or pulsing in the forest. And all of a sudden, it's like this child's sense of euphoria where you just get so much energy, right? So just little glimpses of those are enough for people to recognize that it can be for them.
How does someone contact a forest therapist, or if they were so inclined, how would one research this more or become a practitioner?
Good questions. There are a number of different organizations around the world. Just type in forest therapy or forest bathing. And we actually call practitioners forest therapy guides versus forest therapists, even though a lot of the people that we train to become forest therapy guide, more and more, a lot of them are actually therapists. So psychotherapists or social workers, you know, so there is quite a good sample of people coming from those fields. And we have lists on our websites. You know, you can contact us and we'll find someone in your area.
Excellent. Hey, Ben, thank you so much for that little dip into what forest therapy is about. And I'm really excited to dig into this podcast episode and try some quiet time in the forest.
Great. Take care, Jen.
Okay.
Thank you.
You too, Ben. Have a good day.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Well, welcome back. So you went for a forest stroll, did you?
I did.
Checking out this forest therapy. Had yourself a forest bath?
I bathed in the forest yesterday.
Were you naked?
I was we're having a cold snap here, which affected the experience.
Yeah.
But I was dressed for it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, good for you for heading out in all kinds of weather. It was beautiful and sunny, but cold.
Yeah.
You mentioned the interesting sort of audio sounds that came from sort of crunching snow or tinkling.
Footprints were very, very loud. And it's because, I mean, we often have that sort of hover around zero temperature weather in winter. And then the snow would have just been fluffing up. But right. No, it's cold enough that the snow is very loud.
It's very loud.
even if you're moving very slowly. That was the biggest noise, for sure, in the forest.
So when we head out for a forest bath, like when we're intentionally wanting to seek some sort of peace or therapy in the forest, we're invited to be very quiet. So other than the sounds that the forest made, the crunching and the snow, or the sounds that you maybe made as you walked through the snow, what else did you hear when you were out in the woods?
So I was very aware of the sound of the coldness of the snow. So when I was completely still, I could hear the crystals of the snow. It was about midday, a little later, and so there was a lot of sunlight, but not really melt, but enough that the snow was, you know, a breeze, or even my movement was causing crystals to shift. So there was a very faint, you wouldn't pick it up in audio, but a tinkle of the sound of snow moving from the branches, and just maybe sitting on the branches as well. There was the sound of birds, but I think we were in the forest at nap time. I'm sure earlier in the day and at different times. It was interesting because when you interview Ben, he talks about how sometimes you need to invite the sound of nature and then suddenly it's there. I didn't have that experience, although I very much believe it's possible. There was some bird sound, but often when I really stopped to listen for them, there were no birds.
They were hiding.
So the sounds were, created by me and the snow. There was also a very faraway sound of an airplane.
Well, we were out in the world. That happens.
But not people. I mean, we're so lucky. I was able to get away from the sound of people or cars.
Beautiful. That already feels restful, just thinking about, you know, a certain kind of quiet that we maybe don't have when we're living in the center of a town or a city. The last week or so, whenever I go in the woods, this is what I have in my head. If you go into the woods today, for a big surprise, did you see any teddy bears?
No teddy bears, but there were bunny tracks. And yes, so my partner, who's so clever at recognizing tracks, that we saw, we separated for some time for the sake of quiet. He thought he saw bobcat tracks as well, but bunny tracks.
Bunny tracks.
And human tracks, both skis before we left the path and poles, human tracks. We had obviously been through a clearing where some children had played recently too. So evidence of play.
Winter in the woods is fun in that regard because it leaves evidence sort of what has gone down. I always find that kind of interesting. Who's been here?
I definitely recognized the play of light in the forest. The sun had more trouble to find its way when I left the paths. There were shadows and movement of light.
I love seeing some of the pictures that you took. We'll have to be sure to put those on our Facebook page.
Yeah, and there's check the opening out when you look up.
Yeah.
The opening of the sky, and the sky was very blue. So that was beautiful.
Yeah, it's refreshing just to see that blue and the sun sort of coming through the trees. What did you smell when you were in the woods?
Now, again, because I was really concentrating, I think I'll lose myself more in the experience the next time I go, and the next time after that even more so. Winter has a different way of affecting the smell in the forest.
It does.
And it was very cold, so I think that affected the way my sense of smell engaged, right?
Absolutely.
So I can only really describe it as snow that I could smell. Dampness and coldness. But I think it will come. I bet you there was more out there, Jen, and I just didn't really get that as well as I might.
These cold winter mornings, I kind of love walking outside from a warm house and smelling kind of clean, like just that great fresh air as it fills your lungs. So that's what the sort of smell of snow is
to me. The smell of winter.
Yeah. Well, we embarked on this exploration of forest therapy with an idea of something that can help us all, our little ones, or calm our own minds. How did you feel after spending time in the forest?
I felt wonderful.
Thank you for going out and exploring.
It was a gift.
I feel like time in the forest is such a gift for all of us, and such a easy or attainable thing to do for most people who live relatively close to some sort of green space or forest.